Okay, so I'm joined in the studio with Matthew Drake Brockman. Good evening, Matt.
Hi, Stephen. How are you going?
Pretty good, thanks. Now, in a moment, we're going to try and get Christine Maggiore on the line from Los Angeles. I don't know how these phones work. I can never seem to work these phone cards, but we'll give it a go and see what happens. So dialing the number and...
Hello, Christine Maggiore here.
Hi, Christine. It's Stephen Pickels from The Queer Noise in Sydney.
Hi, Stephen.
And I got Matt here with me as well.
Hi, Christine.
I'm Matt.
Okay, so Christine, you're a public speaker and AIDS educator in Los Angeles, and you've written a book, What If Everything You Thought You Knew About AIDS Is Wrong? So before we start, would you like to sort of give us a brief summary? You've had a diagnosis since about 92. Would you like to just briefly summarize your life since then?
Sure. In 1992, I was on a routine medical exam, and at the urging of the doctor I was seeing, took an HIV test because I thought it was like voting or recycling, just something that people did to be socially responsible. I didn't know much about AIDS and HIV because I had been living out of the country for a number of years, and when I got back the results that said I was positive, I was quite shocked and didn't have a lot of information other than what I'd read in newspapers. And I was left to my own devices. I rather quickly became a public speaker and an educator for several AIDS organizations here in Los Angeles. And I was told by doctors at that time that I was too healthy to take the medications. About a year into my positive diagnosis, I had an experience in looking for a doctor that I thought I could die with. I found one who suggested that I might not be dying and that I ought to retake the test. She thought my results looked suspicious given my excellent health, and despite the fact that I had located a former boyfriend who also tested positive, we were together from 1985 until 1990. So at her behest in 93, I took a series of HIV tests that came out indeterminate, positive, negative, and positive. And that inspired me to take a look at what I call the other side of AIDS, information that took a more critical look at what I had been taught to teach people, and that is the basis of my book. It's been 14 years plus since I tested positive. I've never taken any of the medications, and I'm a healthy, active person, not suffering from anything associated with AIDS except the judgment, the social stigma, and those sorts of problems there.
So, Christine, you said you went from being positive to negative to indeterminate to positive. How can that be? We're meant to have a standardized testing kit which tells you either yes, you're positive, or no, you're not, or as we've been told.
That's what I wondered, too, when it happened to me. I thought that a positive was a definitive diagnosis. And when I looked into it, I discovered a number of things, including the fact that none of the tests actually looked for or detect anything that is specific to HIV, whether it be antibodies or bits of genetic material, such as what is found through these tests called viral load. All of them carry disclaimers that say they can't detect the virus itself or specific components of that and are not licensed to be used for the specific purpose of diagnosing HIV infection, which flies in the face of everything we're told. And interestingly, also, there's no standard anywhere in the world between labs or government agencies, countries, as to what constitutes a positive test result.
Yeah.
To give you a quick example, here in the United States, there are many different standards as to what counts as a positive. The tests are interpreted. There's a series of bands that they're called, and when these show up as being reactive in people, they can be mildly reactive, strongly reactive, or not reactive at all, or anywhere in between, they're interpreted. And just to give a quick example, the blood banks, the Red Cross, have the lowest standard of interpretation as to what is a positive because their agenda is to protect the blood supply.
Mm.
On the other hand, at the opposite end of the spectrum is our Department of Defense, which has the highest interpretation of what a positive is because their agenda is to gain as many new recruits into military service as they possibly can, so they don't want to be turning anyone away. And most people don't know that there are varying standards as to what constitutes a positive result.
Okay, so it could be the same person. You could be in the US, and what you're telling us is your doctor could actually tell you to get on these potentially toxic and life-threatening medications, as I understand it.
The medications definitely have unwanted adverse effects, which can range from inconvenient things such as diarrhea, sleep disorders, nausea, fatigue, vomiting, loss of appetite, tingling in the tongue, to organ failure, diabetes, muscle wasting, facial wasting, very serious problems. In fact, today in the United States, the leading cause of death among HIV-positive Americans today is organ failure from AIDS drugs.
So as an organization, does your organization try and dissuade people from taking a test in the first place?
We don't offer advice one way or the other. We put the information out there, answer people's questions, offer supportive materials and even supportive people that they can speak with, but we leave the decisions about testing up to them.
So would you
and
say
with regard to Africa, you asked about testing there. AIDS is interpreted there as a very loose collection of symptoms, fever, involuntary weight loss, transient cough, diarrhea. That in and of itself qualifies for an AIDS diagnosis with no HIV test necessary.
But these are all symptoms that have been rife in Africa ever since white supremacist intervention, wouldn't you say?
Well, anytime you're in a place where there's poverty, where there's malnutrition, where there's lack of basic medical care, there's unclean water, there's wars, you know, all those sorts of things, yeah, you find disease and poverty and you find people with those very symptoms. So it's not unusual to find that. And in the last 20 years, coinciding with what we call the AIDS epidemic, there has been policies enacted by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank that take away from the infrastructure of many of these African nations, which causes more poverty and more disease and more suffering. And with the advent of AIDS, that's only exacerbated because all the funding now goes to condoms, so-called awareness education, and toxic drug importation. But interestingly, despite all of that, there was just an article that claimed that Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, is experiencing a population explosion caused by AIDS. The population explosion that's happening there is due to the fact that donors are investing in HIV/AIDS rather than family planning.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, well, we might just leave it there for a moment. After the break, we'll be back with more from Christine Maggiore. Okay, so we've got Christine Maggiore on the line from Los Angeles. Just getting back to something more personal to you, Celia Farber, the journalist Celia Farber from LA City Beat, wrote a story in June about your situation. You had a three-year-old daughter who was never diagnosed HIV positive. She subsequently died from antibiotics. Is that something like that?
In 1996, I met the man who's my husband, and 2 months after we met and had our first intimate encounter, I became pregnant. We had our son in September of 97. As a matter of fact, it's his birthday next week. And 5 years later, we had a little girl. Both our children were born at home with a certified nurse midwife. Both were healthy, my daughter being a pound heavier and 3 inches longer than my son was at birth. Both were in the care of two and sometimes three separate pediatricians. And both the kids very involved in activities, play groups, play dates, and so forth, exposed to a lot of other children, and neither had ever been vaccinated. So that's a testimony to their good health that they could move around among so many children and remain remarkably healthy. We never had an incident of emergency medical care, even concerning symptoms. In April of last year, my daughter had a cough and a runny nose and a fever, so I brought her to see two of our local pediatricians we see. One put her on an oxygen meter at my request and checked her out thoroughly, throat, ears, eyes, nose, everything. The other did the same thing, both agreed in their conclusion that she had fluid in her ears. We saw a third pediatrician, who's my favorite, who happened to be coming to town. He actually practices out of state. He saw my daughter and diagnosed the same thing, an ear infection. We called him back a week later when her symptoms weren't improving, and he prescribed an antibiotic. That was on May 14th. When he left, she was sitting at the kitchen table having a popsicle. She had no cough and no more runny nose, just this in her ears, and not feeling herself. The next evening, after her second dose of the antibiotic, she went into cardiac arrest and died. We called emergency services, an ambulance came and rushed her to a local hospital. They did two chest x-rays, a CAT scan, a spinal tap, all kinds of blood work, and could not tell us why she died. Her case was referred to the LA County Coroner's Office for an autopsy. They couldn't find anything to explain why she died at autopsy, and noted that her lungs had no inflammation. I mention this because 4 months later, a different coroner working in the Los Angeles County Coroner's Office, who's had his credibility challenged numerous times and has been involved in legal matters regarding his changing conclusions and also losing and finding evidence, so forth, he came in 4 months later and said my daughter had died of pneumonia, AIDS-related pneumonia specifically, and that started a whole police investigation and an investigation with the Department of Child and Family Services. But getting back to the original autopsy, after two chest x-rays at the hospital and autopsy that found no inflammation in her lungs, they decided to say that my daughter died of AIDS pneumonia. And that's been a horrific situation that our families had to live with. Consequently, my son, who had never been tested, and my husband, who had declined testing since we got together, went out and took what are called HIV tests, you know, knowing full well what they can't tell us. And my son tested 4 times in a row HIV negative, and my husband and partner also tested HIV negative. And we've since found out that there is no evidence forthcoming that my daughter ever tested HIV positive. So we're in a real mess over here.
So if what you're saying is true, what would this guy, what's his main reason for wanting to do that?
I think he's a medical examiner that does what he's told. For example, he's involved in a civil suit right now. Just to give a name to this individual, his name is Dr. James K. Reby, and he's named as a defendant in a civil suit for having changed autopsy reports on several purported murder victims multiple times, the last time to suit a confession that later turned out to be fabricated by police officers and attributed to a man with an IQ of 60 who was later found to be innocent by DNA evidence.
Well, that's certainly good evidence to suggest that he was completely wrong and the original autopsy proved inconclusive. So what would your advice be to any mother who takes an HIV test and returns a positive result whilst pregnant?
You know, the situation has become very punitive. We're not offered choices. I don't even know what the advice would be because, first of all, I'm not licensed to give medical advice.
Okay.
And second of all, it's almost as if, well, at this last AIDS conference that took place in Toronto, Canada,
yeah,
a doctor who's written to me specifically about my daughter, and I've tried to write him back and engage with him, and his name is Dr. John Moore. He's an AIDS researcher at Cornell. As usually happens, these critics and naysayers do not wish to engage with those of us who are exploring these matters of science and epidemiology and medicine with regard to AIDS. I'll call them AIDS censors. And he gave a speech all about how debate should be silenced. Any kinds of critiques of the popular ideas about HIV and AIDS should be kept completely out of the media. And these stories and facts simply cannot be told. And it's interesting if you think back on the years when the slogan from the AIDS mainstream was silence equals death. We can almost say right now silence equals AIDS, because if you're going to be involved in AIDS, you want silence. You don't want anyone challenging any of this information. It's hard to believe that I'm living in a democracy and that Canada, where this took place, is a democracy. But apparently in AIDS, there is no such thing as democracy, free thinking, skepticism, critical thought, independent decision making. So it's become extraordinarily difficult to make informed decisions. And unfortunately, the case of my daughter is being waved like a flag in this army of AIDS enthusiasts who want to see an end to all debate, discussion, and free thought.
Yeah, well, it's very confusing. One wonders if these medical people do want to save lives or they just want to get kickbacks from drug companies.
I'm sure there's people involved who are very sincere in their desire to help make the world a better place. I think many of them operate with information that is not correct. I know that when I was speaking on behalf of the AIDS organizations, telling people that they should get tested, the tests are accurate, take the drugs, AIDS is a disease, when in fact it's not, I believed with all my heart that I was doing the right thing. And when someone suggested to me that I should check out information that was contrary to what I was teaching, I thought they were crazy until I looked at it. I had an open enough mind that I looked at it. So I understand how good people end up in a situation of doing things that may not necessarily be serving the greater good.
So do you have any addresses of these sites where people can get the information?
Absolutely. RethinkingAIDS.com, the one for the group that I run. The easiest way to get there is questionaids.com. And there's a specific site that just got set up that's all about HIV tests. I noticed it the other day, and I highly recommend that. It's a deathsentence.com, and that has everything that we've talked about and more with regard to HIV tests. And I think anyone who's considering taking one or taking the results to heart should check out that website, adeathsentence.com. And I think that it takes courageous, open-minded people to open up this subject for scrutiny, and only then will we be able to really come to meaningful solutions for what we're calling HIV and AIDS.
Yeah. Well, I'm not holding out much hope, but that would be a lovely dream to happen. But for now, thanks very much, Christine Maggiore. And thanks, Matt, as well.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, yeah.
Okay.
You guys take care.
Yeah,
thanks.
You too.
Thanks, Christine.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.